Welcome back to It Starts With You podcast with me, Mark Hopkins, and Happy New Year. In this podcast, we get to listen to Simon J talk about his starting up a business, and also I chip in my 2 cents worth of starting the business and how hard it is and stressful it is and things that need to do. Also, we get to hear about Simon's business and what he does in the contractor financing market and how he positions himself to look at the market across the whole entire market, I guess. And he'll explain what he does. Super interesting, actually, what he does, because I've not come across anyone that does this yet. I may be correct. Corrected soon into the future, but hey, but yeah, I'll catch you on the other side. Enjoy. Hey Simon, how are you?
Hey Mark, yeah, really well. How are you? Good to speak. Finally, yeah,
finally, good to speak. Good to speak. I guess best place to start with yourself. Who are you? What are you doing? What are you doing it?
Well, I'm Simon J. I've worked within the funding field directly into recruitment businesses for the last coming up to 10 years. And wow. I've recently set up on my own, finally, after a long time within market.
Wow, 10 years in this market. I did know that about you.
Nearly 10, yeah. So I left school. I did an A-level grad scheme with Tesco, which didn't really work for me, the retail world. And I fell into a small recruitment funder local to home in telesales. And yeah, I guess the rest is history, really.
Oh, wow. Wow. What is funding in the recruitment world? What is this about?
Yeah, there's so much to it, which I'll probably go into a bit more depth of why the business is here. But basically, recruitment businesses, most recruitment businesses, especially temp contract focused businesses, use some sort of cash flow finance to pay and fund their temporary or contract workers. So recruitment funding, there's 3 or 4 different types, but it's basically relieving cash flow against the outstanding sales invoice to the end client to allow you to pay the contractors and grow your business without sort of waiting on those hefty 30, 60, 90, 120-day terms.
Oh, God, yeah. And this is what banks used to do many years ago. It was the payday fund or something. I can't remember what it was called now.
Yeah, Cash Friday was kind
Cash
of
Friday,
where it
all
started.
It was a
product that Lloyds Bank bought a long, long time ago. And kind of where this whole market started, and it's really interesting. And a few people within the market sort of set that model up, and it turned into... Cool, there's a lot of suppliers out there now doing lots of things in different ways.
So your job is to, I know a little bit about this because we've spoken about it, is to compare them. Is that right? Is that what you're setting yourself out to do?
So just to give a bit of synopsis, so I've done it for a while. I've sold sort of payroll, back office funding, invoice finance, factoring, etc. into market. And the whole idea of the business came when recruitment businesses, it seemed that they didn't really know what they were looking for when they were coming to set their business up, or they were coming to move products, and they really needed a bit of non-biased advice in actually what products are out there, what facilities work right for their business, and actually are they getting the right deal for their business, and are they using the right service? And something I've been thinking about for a while, and what Compare Recruitment Factoring does is it does exactly what it says on the tin. We go out to market and compare 90% of the funders that provide into the recruitment market, be it payroll back office funders or invoice financiers. And we support the recruitment business through the whole process of actually, are they picking the right solution? Are they making the right move? And what their key needs from a facility are.
It's interesting that you come along to do this, because 4 years ago, I signed up with one. Didn't work out, as in I didn't need them. Signed up with another, was a fucking nightmare. Absolute nightmare. I'm not going to mention them. I'm not going to mention, you know who they are, because we've spoken to death. And then I've met a few now since, and I'm kind of like, oh, I like the way you work. I like the idea of this. But I've kind of kept away from contractors and temps for the moment for a couple of reasons. But it is a strange marketplace. How do you kind of... compare them. What are you really kind of doing? What comparisons are you doing? Is it mostly cost or abilities?
It's really weird you say that, Mark, because I set up the compare the market of factoring. I thought, yeah, everyone's going to want to save money and flip across and go to different providers. I'm 5 months in, and that is 90% not the case.
So, really? Wow.
Yeah, and it's really weird. We are making savings for people, and that's still key at the top of the agenda. But actually, what's been a lot more important for a lot of the recruitment businesses is actually a facility that works for their business. Because you say, like you say, it's so confusing, and there's so many different offerings out there.
Yeah.
No one really knows what to look for, and the BDs in the market are very good. There's some really good, strong salespeople within this market.
Yes.
So people just sort of buy from people, especially in this industry, and then they may have made the wrong decision. So that's where it kind of came from. And does someone need the payroll and back office if they're only running high value contractors, and they've got 10 contractors out and they're turning over £2 million? Do they need a payroll back office funder that's costing them a fortune, or can they raise the invoice themselves and pay the contractors themselves and save a substantial amount of money just using a factoring facility?
Yeah, that's fascinating. So why did you start up then? What was the kind of catalyst for you to think, right, I want to do this on my own. I've got this idea. Let's go run with it.
I guess it's a really good question. I think there's loads of things to that. And I'll probably throw the same question back at you, actually, because I don't even know why you started that. But in essence, I was at a time in my life where I could. Made some decisions in my life where I became comfortable enough to actually be able to take that hit and not take a salary for a little bit. I'd always wanted to set up a business. So my sort of entrepreneurial spirit goes back to sort of late teens or early teens when I went on a trip to China with school and bought a load of sunglasses and sold them on eBay as replicas, obviously. And that was my first hit of sort of buying something and selling something and making a profit from it. And ever since there, it's just been totally in my head. So I'm the type of person that would go to car boot sales and buy something and then chuck it on eBay with my dad and we'd make 30 quid and have a party. And just the way I've always been.
That's interesting. So you've always kind of wanted to be your own boss then, your own kind of... That's
100%. I've worked for people. I've worked for some really great companies and I've seen some really great business people grow great businesses and always thought I could do it. And I don't know whether you even know, but I actually had a go at it when I was about 22, 23. I set up a small factoring company with a couple of people and... it didn't work out after 6 or 7 months. It wasn't right. It didn't feel right. I was far too young. Yeah. I wasn't in a place to do it, and I needed to go back and I needed to get much more experience in market.
Exactly same. Exactly same. I started in recruitment, and then a year later, I had to go myself, and I did it for about five
months.
Yeah. I won't mention the company I did it with. It was self-employed, but it was through this company. So you're working from home and you're getting paid the commission, but you were self-employed, if that makes sense. And
working under your brand or their brand?
Working under their brand.
Okay, cool.
But you were self-employed.
So you've got an established brand already there.
100%. And they gave you some jobs as well. So it's mostly resourcing, I feel. It's on my CV when I give my CV, but it's not on my LinkedIn. Because my LinkedIn would be massive if I put everything on there. I've gone back like 200 years. And I had a go at it. And the only thing that at the time I was, I think, immature about, I was 25, 26 at the time.
Yeah,
okay, I felt immature about was I wasn't managing my time properly. The feast and famine of ups and downs of running your own business or being self-employed at the time wasn't quite right for me. Plus, you're into recruitment. I didn't know much. I really didn't have a clue. I understood what needed to be
done. What sector was it that you were dealing in?
Do you know what? Funny you should say that. I said to them what I wanted to do, because being engineering, recruitment kind of background or engineer background, I said I want to do that. And I ended up doing bits of engineering. Then it went into procurement, then marketing, then HR.
Oh, wow.
And it was wherever. He basically used to phone me up, the boss of the company, and said, what do you want this week? And I said, I don't know. Give me I like senior stuff. I love filling the senior stuff. And he goes, all right. Off he goes. And he got me this senior role. It was like 14 grand placement fee. And I remember like nervous because I've never dealt with anything like that. Up until that moment in time, all I was doing, all I had been doing is putting design engineers into Germany for Airbus and stuff like that. And I... Okay. I didn't know how to do permanent recruitment doing that. And I made some, I did make some money doing it. It wasn't huge amounts of money, probably about the same amount of money if you had a basic wage in recruitment, but you know, you wouldn't, you know, it was all from scratch. And then, me and the missus sat down, and my now wife, but she was my missus then. This is 15 years ago, this is.
Wow.
I know. I'm just thinking about this. And she said, I know you want to run your own thing. I know you want to do your own thing. But, you know, do you think you're capable of doing it? You're obviously getting angry a lot about it and not making money. And I remember taking that last fee. I think it was about $7,000 or $8,000. And then I applied for a couple of jobs. And I landed a job at Reed. And I went, oh, you know what? Let's go. And when I started at Reed, I then realized how much I didn't know in permanent recruitment, in that new business sales recruitment. Whereas previously,
did you do the Reed? Is it Reed where you go down in the Cotswolds and and then you do an initiation for like a week? I was talking to someone about it recently, actually. So I've never actually worked in recruitment, but everyone who's worked for Reed goes to this big place in the Cotswolds. And I've heard loads of great stories about it, actually.
Oh, I got stories of phenomenal. I loved it. I absolutely loved my time at Reed. I outgrew Reed, and that was the problem, because I then passed the recession, had a game plan to go off and start my own business and give it a go. Mm-hmm. And that's the important part. I just wanted to give it a go. Can I do this? This was the thought and process. But when I was at Reed, first, I was at Reed twice. So I was at Reed before the recession and then just after the recession. I was there for quite a considerable period of time and became a business manager and ran teams and successful teams. And then some we had to kind of close down and move on to the next thing. It's just the nature of the beast, really, in this industry. But I remember my first day in the Cotswolds, and you get it. It was actually a two-man room, so there was two of us in the room, and it was really weird.
Oh, wow.
The last time I did that was when I was 18 in the Air Force. That's the last time I shared a room with a stranger. And I remember, and the courses, the content was brilliant. The trainers were phenomenal.
Do you remember the guy you were in the room with for the first time? Is he still in recruitment? That'd be fascinating, that would be.
Interestingly, I don't remember his name. I remember what he did. He did engineering recruitment in Milton Keynes, but he did plumbers and electricians, which I didn't even know existed as a recruitment process at the time. Yeah. I knew that because the team I was hired into already had some contracts with Atkins and BAE Systems and Airbus. So I was slotting in and then just continuing that continuity, then new business on top of it. So for me, the training was account management, new business, you know, running a desk, basically standard stuff that you would do in recruitment. But with that guy, I never understood it, what he did and how he did it. And then he was saying in the training sessions, we were doing a bit about where to find candidates or where to find businesses to work with. His job was to write, every time you drove down to supermarket or drove around town, his job was to write down any plumber vans he saw, any electrician vans he saw, get their number, contact them, and see if they wanted to contract at a gig that he had with Atkins or, you know, with the what they're called now, the big ones, the big players in the civil market. So they go in and do some big jobs then for them as contractors, and then they'll charge their rate for them and blah and all that type of stuff.
That would certainly be fascinating to see where he's in the city market and everything like that.
I love to know. I have kept in touch with a lot of people from those days, and even more recently since, you know, because the reason I split it in half before the recession and after the recession. Before the recession, I lived in Bristol. And then after the session, I lived in Tamworth. So we moved because my wife's from Tamworth. So we moved up during the session and stuff like that. So I kept in contact quite a few of them. And I would say about 90% of them are not in recruitment now, I would say.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
I wonder what they're doing, what markets they've gone into. Because I don't know what your thoughts are on the market, but we do a lot of work with new start recruitment businesses, and the stats of how many recruitment businesses are setting up sort of monthly and yearly at the moment are absolutely phenomenal. Some months you'll see sort of over 200, 250 recruitment businesses, limited companies setting up a month.
Yeah. Some of I find it extraordinary that the companies that are losing recruiters are not catching on to this. are not understanding. Mm-hmm. You'll see some companies like, you know, the company I work with, SSG, you see there's a few of them very similar. They're not recruitment agencies. They're incubators to help you start up and build your business.
Mm-hmm. And there's some really good ones out there, and they serve a real great purpose for people in certain circumstances when they set up.
Exactly. But then you see the agencies themselves, and they would rather lose a medium ochre all right biller or a kind of less than all right biller to go start up and become a competitor and strangely do well, which is I've spotted a few times, or their top guy, and they would rather see that top guy disappear and not be able to support them. So there's something fundamentally wrong inside most recruitment agencies today. That's my opinion, that are forcing perfectly awesome people to come out of employed and take a big risk and go and do it self-employed.
So what is it, Mark? Is it the money? Is it the flexibility? Is it the freedom? Is it the corporateness? I think the answer to that question is everything. And correct. It just depends on everyone. I used to think it's just everyone wants to make more money, but there's some great commission schemes out there with some big recruitment businesses these days that actually, some of these people would be better off staying financially, but actually they want a better lifestyle balance. They want to work from home. They want to do this. And I think that's where I don't see much of the recruitment market with people that work from, I've worked from home for five odd years working for different funders. I don't see too much of it. I'm seeing a bit more of the flexibility and the sort of the 4-day weeks, which is something that I'm sure we could probably do another podcast on, because I think it's a fascinating theory. I'm not sure. I think that's a totally different topic, and I'll be here for 5 hours talking about it. But why is it that these perfectly good employees and they're an asset to these businesses? Why are they leaving?
But I find it's not just perfectly good. I don't think there is a template of the recruiter that goes and start up on their own. I think people are not doing too all right. They've made a couple of placements, still think that they can go and start up on their own. And even the top guys, which are phenomenal, and the part of the top 5% of a business making 50% of the bloody income of the business, are walking away and doing it on their own. Generally think let's peel recruitment back to its core kind of situation. It's what it really is. It's a person with knowledge on how to find a certain category of sector. Okay, so there's one qualification that you need to be. So like me, I know engineering. I can find people in engineering. So that's what I sell to clients that I can do. Then it's what's the barrier to entry to it? You need a laptop, internet connection, an office chair, and a desk, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Once you start looking at everything else around that and what else you need, is dependent on the sector and direction you go. The person themselves, this is the one thing about recruitment that recruitment agencies are not getting. That's my belief. Every person in recruitment is a salesperson, or tries to be a salesperson, or tries to have the entrepreneurial spirit of being a salesperson. So they already understand risk. Every recruitment company you go and work for, you're only as good as your last placement. So think about this. If you don't make money for the last 2 months, you're at risk of being thrown out the door. So you're at risk anyway. Yeah. So how I pictured it, I envisioned from 2010 onwards, I want to do this myself. How am I going to do it? And I needed to learn how to, and build myself up and get myself ready to start my own business. When I was let go from the last company I worked for, it was that moment of, right, I better do this now. I better crack on. I better start doing this.
Telling you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it wasn't about, for me, because at the time I had already set up 3 desks for 3 different companies and started again every time at the risk of me. The only thing is I had an income at the time, and that was the only, factor. That was because I started up desks in companies with less resources than I have today, which is, I found quite extraordinary actually, considering they have money to pour into it. I lost my thread. That was it. So you've got groups of people which are coming in to start up a desk for you, entrepreneurial spirit, at risk to themselves, not to the company. They're at risk to themselves and their career doing that. So they're coming out of recruitment agencies going, well, if I'd just done that 3 or 4 times, why don't I have a go? Go get a loan, go get a credit card, find someone to back you, whatever it is.
Yeah.
6 or 7 grand investment in myself. with a couple of other quid on some other things. Probably maximum 10 grand if you want to be over the top. Some people do it with 400 quid in the bank. Basically,
some do it with a quarter of a million, sort of the Lord Sugar Investments, etc. So there's
bloody
there's
get me started on that. Yeah, but Ricky Martin. Yeah, yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
And smashing it by the looks of it.
Personally, I think if you have a platform to jump off, then the best platform to jump off is probably the one with the most amount of money, because it is. I've been doing this for 4 years. I've grinded away for 4 years to get to a point. I feel that my business name and my personal name are two different levels. I think because it's on me on my own, I've pushed my personal brand over my business brand. And that, I guess, is fine. But once you got lump sum of money and someone's going to give it to you, are you really the boss? Because there's a chance that someone else is your boss and it's the brand. You get what I mean? So ownership and all that lot, you know, I'll let you deal with that if you want, if that's what you want. Do you want to give away business or do you want 100% of it or however you want to do it? But the financial risk to yourself, where you're in and out of jobs and recruitment and you're probably missing a couple of months salary because you're still looking for the right job next year. Oh, this is the right job. Go and do it. 6 months down the line, you're out the door. You're thinking, well, I might as well have a go myself. In the end, that's what people do. And this is conversations I've had with people. And when they do, they get past the fear of the first 3-4 months and they start making money. And it could be a couple of grand, five, 6 grand. And then they make a bit more money. And then they make a bit more money, but they're still seeing their kids' plays. They're still going down the supermarket at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to do a quick shop. Or
they're in the pub at 2 o'clock on a Friday.
Correct. And they're still going home and doing a bit of work. Or they're on the weekend. Oh, shit, I better do that advert now. Do the advert on Sunday evening or something like that. Get it out. Whatever it is, they've suddenly turned a work-life balance into a work-life integration. And you know, I've been on camping trips on holiday with my laptop on my and it's pissing with rain outside the tent, and I'm doing some recruitment, and I'm in the middle of North Wales or Cornwall, you know.
It's interesting you say that, Mark. Sorry to cut you off, because when I've worked sort of for providers before setting up on my own, I was still the shadow that was it was on my iPhone, and when I was in Spain, I was still doing it. And when I was away, I was still taking calls and things like that. So personally for me, and I don't think I'm too much different, nothing really changed too much. I guess because I work from home, but from being employed to not, apart from having a salary. So,
do you know what?
I think people do.
Yeah, exactly. And if you start your business and you suddenly turn around and say, I've made a living for myself, nothing's changed. Your business, to my humble opinion, your business is successful. You are successful in that sense, because that to me means that you've transferred what you know and how you do things into a job you've created, and then your continuity and continue. You're paying yourself, and bills are paid, and the missus is happy, and life goes on. And if you can do that, then you're successful. It doesn't matter how much you're earning. As long as you cover everything you feel personally you need to cover, then great. If it's not quite getting there, then review it. See what's going wrong. Was it for you? Or is it you doing something wrong? Go and learn something new. You know what I mean? Just try to make it work for you. But if you go into it and it hasn't got that continuity from employed, if this is my humble opinion, by the way, and it is a challenge, and you're 6 months into it and you're not enjoying it, then you're built for being employed, in my humble opinion.
100% agree. There is a time. There's no shame in it. If it's not working for you, don't keep doing it, because I see so many people talking to recruiters that are just so highly stressed.
Having
problems with clients that they're working with and payments, etc. And it's just causing stress that they don't. And that's the biggest thing that we see of people setting up, is that running a recruitment desk and running a recruitment business is totally different. So you've got your accounts team that will do this, or you've got your team doing here. You've got the software that you have pure access to, and then you start day one and you don't have these things. And where on earth you start is, it's fascinating.
I agree. And that's why you go to the companies like SSG, and, you know, incubator companies that will give you advice and direction and where to go to. And then if you sign up with them, they'll support you and give you all that direction. I'm actually in a process at the moment writing a blog in the background, which probably will come out sometime in the near future, about like what you need to know and what you need to do to start an agency. and start up on your own. Yeah. So it's...
I'll be happy to get involved with that if you need any support with that as well, Mark. Because,
oh, 100%. You will be involved in the contractor side of it. So don't worry. But it's not a book or anything like that. Well, I don't think it's a book at the moment because it is getting lengthy. It's about 5 pages long at the moment. So it's going to be a blog series. And my learns over the last 4 years. And it's been... we were saying about, like, once you get to a point and it gets challenging and then you start thinking, should you go back to employed and stuff like that? My last 4 years, I've had those questions asked myself a few times because it's not a bed of roses all the time. If you're taking money from the business and you're doing well and you're paying your bills, that is success. However, within that, you're still having the ups and downs of recruitment and the ups and downs of problems and you know, and everything like that. And you do question your sanity. Being self-employed isn't easy, full stop.
No, and it, not, yeah, no.
Unless you've made your millions, then it's a different, you're in a different world, then you're in a different stratosphere.
I don't even think it's just financial. So for us, well, me, I keep saying we and us, I don't know why.
Don't worry, you'll get used to it.
It's been 5 months, it has been so stressful. The highs have been the highest highs I've probably ever had in my business career. And the lows have been possibly the lowest lows that I've ever had as well. But money aside, actually the stress hasn't specifically been financial and cash flow, except because I've planned for that. And I've planned to know that it's not coming in or we're not taking this at this point. So the stresses for me have been IT, accounts, and you just have to know so much, or you can't do the VAT on this, and if you do this on this, or and that is where
those are the things
I've found it the most stressful.
But those are the things you learn to tolerate, so you don't you stress about them less, but they're still there, they never go away. And even the lows and cash flow, you're still budgeting in 2 years' time, even though you've got money coming into the business and you're doing all right. You're still budgeting in 2 years' time because there may be a recession, or there may be Brexit, or there may be, you know, stuff like that. And you're kind of, so you still got to think ahead. I try to plan 6 months ahead and try to have enough money in my business or in my bank account to cover myself for the next 6 months. Now, if you're in an employed job, how many months ahead do people plan?
None, I expect. One.
The next month, isn't it? It's the next payday.
Yeah, absolutely.
People mostly plan from payday to payday. So there's the change that I've noticed in myself. But if you haven't got 6 months of money in the bank account, you run your business, don't stress. Just keep going. Just keep moving forward in that. What did you do when you had your lows over the last couple of months? What have you done? Because I've had some lows. It's been quite difficult. But what have you been doing? How have you been keeping yourself motivated?
I'm not sure I have, if I'm honest. I've had some pretty lows of, what have I done? So I've wasted time. I feel like I've wasted time. So it's been specifically technology for me that's been the issue. Server this and email this, and everything seems to be, and then your emails go to someone with junk, and then you have an absolute meltdown because you're never going to be able to run a business because an email goes into junk. So it's been those sort of things. And what I've found is that I plan to have a day of business development, talking to recruitment businesses, and then something's happened at 9:30 in the morning and it's written my day off, and I've just Googled it, and how do you do this and how do you do that, and with technology. And it's something I really need to learn from, because I've wasted days and days over the time doing that. And then I've looked into sort of IT support and things, but I'm a one-man band with one laptop at the moment, and reasonably tech savvy. And I don't think I really have. I think I'm coming out the other side and it's all sort of settling down, which I guess is the way. But being able to park something is something I need to learn to do. And I'd be interested to talk to people about that as well, because I get my head in these sort of spaces where I just become focused on things that are probably less relevant than I think they are.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I know that. I know that feeling quite a lot.
So dangerous on time wasted. So, but it happened. And for any advice to a recruitment business setting up and things like that, don't think that you're going to be BDing all day, every day. Because today, for me, was a plan of doing something in the morning, and then something happened with this, and a call came in with this, and everything gets totally thrown. And while I've been on this podcast with you, Mark, and this is the strength of a one-man band business, I've had an incoming inquiry through my landline phone that no one can take.
Yep. Yeah, and same here. I've got two missed calls on my mobile right now. because it's and you can't plan it. And that's the thing where, you know, when you're planning things, like I go on meetings and I'm driving down the road and someone calls, like a candidate calls randomly at 9:30 in the morning and I'm on the M5 or something like that. And you can't plan that. That's going to happen anyway. No one can take the call. But what you can do, and there's a few companies, or a few recruiters out there that do this, and I'm not adverse to this, by the way. I just think at the beginning it might be a bit of a waste of money, but they go off and hire e-receptionist. So they pay a subscription to e-receptionist, tax and that type of stuff, and working out your books every month. They go and get QuickBooks. Actually, I think that's a good idea. Get QuickBooks. Make sure you got...
Brilliant idea. Yeah, biggest piece of advice I give any business setting up.
QuickBooks
or other ones. I use QuickBooks now. Yeah. I think it's fantastic, and it saved me absolute days of time.
I SSG use QuickBooks for me, and they give me certain things. I log in there and do certain things in there as well. Put your receipts on there. VAT. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that has just made VAT million times easier. End of year as well. It does end of year to a point, and then just get an accountant.
I haven't got there yet.
Yeah, you'll get there. But get accountants to look over it afterwards. And you know, accountants absolutely love QuickBooks. You give them the QuickBooks print out and they look at it and I go, oh, this is fantastic. It's categorized. I've just got to go through it now and see what you did where and check a couple of your receipts and off we go.
Funny you bring up accountants, because another thing from an advice point of view with accountants, I thought I would need to engage an accountant from day one.
No.
And I haven't, because you actually don't need to until sort of your end of the year. You can do your VAT returns very easily yourself now, and you can set your companies up and do your VAT, and it's pretty straightforward.
I would say get to the end of your year, go to month 13, month 14, go and seek an accountant to do your end of year for you, and just shop around. I mean, I think you're getting them today between £500 to £1,000 end of year to be done. And sometimes you get your self-assessment thrown in by some of the accountants out there as well.
About I'm going to get one a little earlier because I need some advice on some other bits. But 100%, have a chat to them. It's not a cost you need from day one.
100%, exactly, and cost it later on. Put it into your plan after the first year, make your money. Because if you get to the end of the first year and you're going to fold the business, it's going to cost you a couple hundred quid to close the business anyway with an accountant. So you need to put that money to one side, if you do or don't. Or it's going to come out of your personal pocket. Yeah, but don't think about that. No one's thinking about closing the business. No one. Get past that. No. And also, advice to anyone starting a business, actually, not just in recruitment. I say plan to the 18th month, don't plan to the 12th month, because I got to the 12th month and that's when things started happening really well for me, because the first year it's always a grind, building it up, and you make a couple of mistakes and whatnot. And then between the 12th month and the 18th month, that's where your plan works. It starts to pick up and really works. It might work sooner, but I found, speaking to other people, they agree. It's around about the 12th month and it starts really, really working for you. But you've got to think of the laws of averages and the laws of sphere of influence and how you're getting yourself out there and marketing and business development. It takes a while. You're on your own. It takes a really good, so don't be tough on yourself, I find, on that respect. What was I going to say? Do you use CRMs or databases or anything like that?
Funny you say, that's another point that's sort of on the agenda. So no is the answer. I looked at it when I set up and it all just looked far too common. And I've probably been one of the worst salespeople in history, the one that's always put it on the CRM, you haven't done it, and I'm just rubbish with tracking stuff. I can track it in my brain mentally, but my managers never loved the fact that they couldn't see it. So I've always been bad. I set up and I tried and I thought, nah, and so I'm using sort of the Outlook calendar and email, and it's working a dream for me. But my plan is in the next 6 months to bring someone in.
Yeah,
and it's not going to work.
No, and that's the big problem with anything where you deal with data of people. Doesn't matter if it's candidates and clients or recruitment agencies or accountants or, I don't know, podcasts or whatever it is. When you're dealing with data, find a system that works for you. And if it works for you and gets the best out of you, use it. but also think about how you're going to grow your business. So if you're going to bring someone in, how are they going to receive this information? Where are they going to go?
Yeah.
It's all great having a spreadsheet, but is the spreadsheet really interactive enough for people to work with? So that's where I found in the first 6 months was trying to find the right CRM I could get on with. I found a couple of cheapy ones. I've settled with Zoho Recruit for the moment, actually. It's actually all right. It does the job for me.
Okay.
Zoho for you, or Salesforce for you. There might be a cheap version of Salesforce out there for
you. Yeah, I've used Salesforce in the past, and there's a lot there, and it's always sort of overwhelmed me by how much information there is on there. I kind of just need as little information to put in as possible, and then I use
it. That's it.
We'll have an update in 6 months on how my CRM search is going.
So from your perspective then, how are you feeling today then? How many months now are you into your business?
It's 5 months at the end of this month. So we're nearly 5 months on the nose.
Coming close to that 6 month marker. It's an important marker that I find.
It's an interesting one. And I don't know if I explained the model, but we kind of act as a broker. So when we act on behalf of a recruitment business, they don't pay us anything. It doesn't cost them anything. So we go out and do all this work for free. And then if we're successful and they go with one of our introduced lenders, the lender then pays us a commission.
Like all compare the markets, isn't it, really?
When they refer it to Admiral, yeah. And that's how it works. But we've been really lucky. We've delivered facilities into 18 recruitment businesses since we incepted, which is amazing. We planned at this stage to do about 3, so we're way ahead of target. So things have actually gone really well, and we're just finding that people appreciate that they're getting some real guidance and looking at options. Don't just go with the first person that knocks on your door and offers you what you think is a good deal because you like the person. And that's the biggest piece of advice. You don't have to come through me. You go and do your research yourself. But look at who you're going with. Talk to it. I always say, if you haven't talked to at least 3. Doesn't mean you have to meet with 3, but talk to at least 3, and then you can gauge them against each other.
I agree.
Yeah, think about it. These decisions are factoring contractor funding into the recruitment market. If you've got a large contract book, they can be one of the biggest expenses in your business. So it's absolutely key. And you could be tying yourself in for 12 months or with notice periods, etc. So seek some advice. Talk to your friends. Talk to people in market and gauge what they think. And yeah, if you want to talk to me. By comparing people via me or via anyone, you'll get a better deal because they'll know that there'd be more than one people involved. And by going through an introducer or a broker, you are likely to get a better deal because the lenders know that they're up against other competition.
That's amazing. Because I really could have done with you 4 years ago. I'll be honest with you, Simon. I could have done with you 4 years ago. Because I did. I made a few mistakes. And then one of them I did, and this is a lesson for everyone, I signed up with, and they effed up one of my clients really badly. The client walked away from me. And it was a big fee as well I got from that client. And they just did all the things wrong with communication.
Yeah.
And that was, you know who I'm talking about as well. And that was the key to this, the communication and how, you know, when you create, this is my theory, right? When you get someone to service level something, to work something for you, to be a supplier, to support you, if that company becomes detrimental to your business, as in the front end of your business. So the front end of your business is candidates and clients. If that service provider jumps over the line, jumps over your head and gets involved with them too, and doesn't consult with you or doesn't involve you, then they have taken it upon themselves to involve themselves with your business in a way that that is going to cause problems.
Absolutely. And the biggest piece of advice I would have given you in that situation is anyone that's talking to your clients that you've created relationships over the years you've been in market, make sure you trust them and make sure you know who it is that's talking to your clients. Credit controls in a market, it's really key. So a lot of factors and funders and payroll backups, they a lot of them do credit control. Some of them don't. Some of them you can turn it off. Some of them do it softly. Some of them do it hard. That's a really key question. If you are looking for credit control, who is doing it? And how hard are they? How soft are they? And are they updating you? Are you speaking to your credit control? What are they saying to your clients? The relationship between you and that's your credit control is probably the most important relationship.
What is their methodology as well? I found very interesting that some of them said they'll, you know, it's a payment terms of 30 days. They'll give it to 31 days and then they send the legal letter. And I'm like, whoa, that's hang on now. Start 31 days, invoice hasn't been paid. Hey, John, the invoice hasn't been paid. Oh, don't worry, Marcus, on the next pay run. All right, so I give it another 30 days. Wait for the end.
Credit control is a real, real funny one. I was on LinkedIn the other day and someone was posting something about it. If you're doing it yourself and you're a perm recruitment business, I saw a really good tip of actually, if you're quite a small or one man or two man band and cash is key, which is any business, but if it's coming up to being due, there is no problem in sending an email to remind them that this is becoming due and are you on the payment run for next week when it's due? And actually, when you send the invoice, and I do it, have you received it? I've just sent it across. Have you received it?
Yes.
It's just key. There's no post alert, but that's a really, yes, I've received it. Brilliant. So you know they've got it. So you know in 30 days it's due.
Yep. That's the thing with QuickBooks, isn't it? There's a repeater email, isn't there? So you can set the emails at certain points.
Yeah, I haven't done that.
Have a look. I haven't done it myself, but I have a company that charges me for things and sends me an invoice. And then they sent it again. It looked automated. And I said, oh, how did you do that? And they said, oh, it's in QuickBooks. It's built into QuickBooks.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. So it automatically just chases invoices. And when the invoice is paid, it knows. And it switches it off straight away. So it doesn't keep sending
that's
dodgy.
Brilliant. That's brilliant. The relationship with the people that pay you, the accounts people, whoever, is a super important relationship. And just keep on talking. And if you've notoriously got a bad payer, why are they a bad payer? Why are they? Have you set them up wrong? Because if you agreed, especially I saw this the other day, put in recruitment business, agreed 14-day terms, absolutely brilliant, lovely. And they were constantly having problems. It's constantly being paid late. But then the debtor, the client, did payment runs once a month. So if they are going to have that problem, they haven't done enough research, they got someone to sign the term, say 14 days, actually the actual accounts payable only run it once a month, so it's always going to be delayed, and some months it will be less and stuff. But they, if you're asking those questions, you can tailor it to know that it's on 30 days and you're not chasing it.
In 4 years, I've sent 2 debt letters because they argued over the value. That's it. Not because of payment terms. They argued over the value. In those 4 years, most, if not nearly all companies I've worked with, I put 14 days payment terms. I know for a fact it's never going to be paid that month. So if I send that invoice at the start of the month, it may be paid at that month. But there's a very good chance it's going to be paid the next calendar month. So it's going to be the 25th pay run or the 28th pay run on the next month. So if you place in January, you're going to definitely get paid the end of next month. But to the point of which you get past the 25th of January, it's probably going to be March when you get paid. You get to know how these procurement companies or how these accounts payable companies start to work, and in most engineering companies, in most companies, and they tend to push it a little bit beyond the payment terms. Just, you don't have to sit on them. Just kindly remind them and just see when
that's a key key point for that is that if you are using, so there's funders out there that fund perms as well, 70%, 80%, 100%. And if they're doing your credit control, but they don't know what you've just told me about that client, they're going to annoy your client. Because if they're chasing on day 15 and they never pay on that time, they're going to annoy it. So that relationship, if the funder doesn't know, they're going to chase it. And so a flexible credit control,
I bet you can. That is the biggest bugbear, because this comes back to again why people do it. They do it for money, and if the money's not coming in, then how do we get the money to come back in? And it all comes down to how you manage your clients, how you credit control your clients, how you invoice, when you invoice, how they manage their invoices, how they pay their invoices. There's so many factors involved that you need to learn and understand about businesses and about things in general, And and sorry, I got distracted by a warning on my screen then. there's so many things, and that in its own right is its own kind of science of running a business.
It is, yeah, and it will always change, and you'll think you've nailed it, and then you'll bring a new client on, or a client will get bought out by someone else, and everything will change. So just be aware that it will constantly change. And outsourcing your credit control to a factor or funder or just a normal credit job isn't a bad thing. So I think it's got a bit of a tarnished name, the mark. But if you've got a good credit controller, that sometimes you being new BD as a recruiter and dealing with your client about the making of the placements and someone else talking to your client to chase the debt, it's quite nice. It breaks that gap. It creates two separate people, whereas you're doing new business but also chasing invoices. So sometimes it can work really well, but sometimes it's quite nice to have that separation.
It is. It is, for sure. I do kind of find that once you get past like 30, 40 days, and you're kind of like, oh, can someone do this for me? Because it needs to be done now on a serious note, or I need to separate myself from it so that I don't lose the relationship, but I can now blame the credit controller or the accountant for chasing that. I say, oh, did she talk to you like that? Oh, I'm so sorry. and that's the truth. That is the truth. That's why we do it. And plus, I don't want to ruin a relationship with a really good client and say, listen, mate, you owe me 15 grand. Why haven't you freaking paid? Because some people will act like that. And if you act like that, go and get a credit controller. I'm serious.
Yeah,
go and get a credit controller.
Absolutely. And you have a credit controller, make sure that the credit controller is the same person throughout the process. So a few years ago, market, there was credit control within funders. And some of them would have someone that chased it at day 30, someone that chased it at day 45 and 50. Ooh. But that doesn't work because you've never ever created a relationship with the credit controller's never created a relationship with your clients. It's a different person every time. Get one person, create a relationship with the client, best thing that you can do.
Yeah, and also train your credit controller to understand your tolerance levels as well. So if you have a system that you don't mind, like breaking the invoice down over 3 months, or just payment terms, you change the payment terms, give them authorization to do only certain amounts of it. Sometimes it's good. As long as you know the money's been paid and when it's going to get paid, it really doesn't matter how they go about it. However, it's got to be paid. And that's the point.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a few funders out there now in market factors that have intelligent credit control software.
It's
like AI or something like that. I don't really know too much about, and I'm not a techie. It builds trends on when your debtors pay. So if BT always pay on the 27th of the month, obviously your credit controller is not going to call before then. But if suddenly if there becomes a trend of them nudging a couple of days over, or they've always paid on the 27th and then in November they don't pay, there's a little notification that pops up to the credit controller. Oh, this is out of trend. Give them a call. And this is proactive credit control. This is really good. And there's lenders that are really getting into this now. It means that there's less resource for them because they're making less calls that they need to be making. And then when they are making the calls, their calls are really valid. And then they ring BT up. Oh, yeah, it's bank holiday, or Sue's off on holiday. It'll be done next week. But you're on top of it and it's not creeping over. So that's really good at the moment.
That's awesome. I've not come across that yet. I love that. That's one thing about running your own business, is learning how to create things to automate your business. I love using automation now. I've got a whiteboard in my office where I'll do something. Something will, like, I experimented with one thing. I'll tell you the experiment with this one thing. I wanted to take a job on from a client and then send an automated email every week to the client saying, I'm still working on it, and then somehow autofill kind of where I'm at, like with candidate A, candidate B, so just giving them a bit of an update. So maybe attach a spreadsheet. They won't have candidate names because of GDPR and stuff like that, but just to show the length of work that's going in, the breadth of work, the type of clients, the type of candidates I'm trying to speak to, and just autofill this attachment to it, if you know what I mean, and then send it out at the end of the week. And talk about time sucking technology. I think I did over Christmas. I think it sucked about 3 days of my life trying to work out how to make this work. I know there's a way it can make it work. However, I haven't found that way. So I've not ditched it, parked it, and looked at other things now. And at the moment, the other thing is a reminder. Just remind me to send this email.
In your Outlook calendar.
In my Outlook calendar. And
and through Zoho as well, so Zoho can remind me and stuff like that. Make sure you send an email to this client. But yeah, you just don't overload yourself with too many clients is the key to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, mate, thank you for your time. Thank you.
It's been awesome, actually. I covered loads, actually, which is really good.
That's it.
Yeah, I think we'll do a CRM special or something in maybe 6 months' time, and I've actually done it, and I can tell you of all the pains and have a massive moan about it for three hours to you. So,
and also the four-day working week special.
Interesting. Let's definitely do that. The four-day working week. I'm really interested and fascinated about it. So, and I think it'll be a 4.5 working day week for me this week.
Just touching on the four-day working week, I've tried for the last 4 years to work it into my schedule and to do it, and in the end, it turns into sporadic 4-5 days in work, but then one half of the day or 2 hours of the day going off and doing something else, going for a ride on the bike just to clear the head. Just to think laterally and stuff, certain stuff. So I think most of us self-employed will kind of work a 4 day week.
But running a business working a 4 day week will never work for me, but I'll always be working and I'll always be on my phone, but you manage your time and I'll do something on a Sunday or a Saturday. So, but for employees of a recruitment business, I think it's an amazing tool to bring in great recruiters who want to have a better work-life balance and everything like that. But it's what happens on that fifth day that they're off. Are they still working? And I'd be interested to see some of these really successful recruiters that are on 4 day week contracts on that Friday. Are they still working at all? Have they physically turned it off? And what are they doing with that time? If they're going to the gym and they're taking their kids out and they're going for meals or doing whatever, that's brilliant. But what are they doing? Are they doing something with that time to fuel their mind ready for the next week? I don't know.
And that is a conversation for another time.
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah, it's 100%. Huge. Thanks so much, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Simon.
I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Definitely. I will speak to you soon, mate. Take it easy.
Yeah, legend. Thanks, Mark. Speak soon.
Bye-bye. What a lovely guy, isn't he, Simon? But thanks for listening to that. And please reach out to Simon, especially if you're a self-employed recruiter looking for contract finance. Go and speak to him. He's a lovely guy. He will help you. And if he can't help you, he will part with information that you didn't know you needed. He is such a great guy for that. And coming soon, we're going to have more people like Simon starting up businesses, being in a situation in their life that they needed to do something about it. And it's all within themselves. And also coming up, hopefully, a special podcast with myself. I'm just looking for some time with a person. Hopefully a special guest is going to do that with me. So I hope you can stick around and listen to more of my podcasts. Thank you for listening so far. Take it easy. Bye-bye.